Our high school guidance counselor used to ask us what you would do if you had $1 million, didn't have to work. And then invariably, whatever you'd say, that was supposed to be your career. So if you wanted to fix old cars, then you're supposed to be an auto mechanic.
So what did you say?
I never had an answer. I guess that's why I'm working at Inatech.
No, you're working at Inatech because that question is bullshit to begin with. If everyone listened to her, there'd be no janitors because no one would clean up if they had $1 million.
If I had $1 million. If I had $1 million.
Talking about millions of dollars.
What would you do if you had $1 million?
I'll tell you what I'd do, man. Two chicks at the same time, man.
We're living in a material world and I am a material girl. Or boy.
Well, what about you now? What would you do?
Besides two chicks at the same time?
Well, yeah.
Nothing.
Nothing, huh?
I would relax. I would sit on my ass all day. I would do nothing.
Well, you don't need $1 million to do nothing, man. Take a look at my cousin. He's broke, don't do
If I had $1 million. If I had $1 million.
Well, welcome to Saxon Jacks. I'm talking about Andrew on the board. SP Futures down 2. DAZ Futures down 15. This is after a big up day yesterday that erased Monday's down day almost exactly, which is interesting. But it was, that's the deal. We have Professor Kevin.
Good morning.
How are you?
Well, living the dream every day of my life.
Well, do you see the traffic heading any way they can from Florida?
Yeah, some of those warnings for this one are pretty dire. Like, if you don't leave, you will die.
Well, it depends on how kind of close to your water. What did Carl say yesterday? You or some lady on the air, I heard, you hide from wind, you run from water.
It's okay. I'll buy that.
Yeah. This thing is looking pretty nasty. It went to a 5, then it dropped way back down, then it flew up again to a 5 or a high 4 or something. And so what's the deal here? 2 years ago, they took out pretty much the southern part of the West Coast. And 2 weeks ago, took out the northern part. Now, tomorrow we're going to take out the center. Kind of a whole sweep, wouldn't you say? The only hasn't been hit is the panhandle. Are they next?
Could be, yeah. Could be next. And Florida State fans are rejoicing.
Why is that?
Because they might put... Maybe they can end their season. Okay. They're like 1-5 or something like that now.
Well, plus this thing is going all the way across the state without really decreasing much. So even if you're on the East Coast, you're not going to get a storm surge, but you're going to get a hell of a lot of rain and wind. And then just going to fly out in the Atlantic and head for Bermuda, I guess. Going to get those guys. So they don't like the big guy upstairs either or somewhere along the line. This is crazy. But, you know, there are an awful lot of really good people in the world. This morning, on the way in, I picked Andrew up and we're heading in and they were interviewing some people from, I think it was Paws Chicago, might have been the Anti-Cruelty. They're heading down with all these vans. And all the animals are going to be displaced. They're going to bring back as many as they can for adoption here. I guess there's a whole bunch from the hurricane last week or 2 weeks ago. And one of the big things, I told you, I don't know if I mentioned on Monday, the dude upstairs is still down there helping his brother clean up their place because he was right where the last one went. And the governor is frantic for people to get. He showed me a video of the sidewalk in front of the place. The entire block is just loaded with sofas, washing machines, dishwashers. I mean, you name it. Everything. I mean, it never happened to me, but I get the feeling that if any of your stuff is ever soaked with salt water, you got to just toss it. I mean, I think if it got caught with fresh water, you could try and dry something out, but I think if it's all nailed with salt. So, I mean, the governor, and intelligently, I think, wants as much of that stuff in the landfill because it'll all become weapons. It'll all be airborne.
Oh, yeah. Well, you know what? The state of Florida in general, and this goes through several generations of governors, is just very good at this. They know how to deal with the aftermath of the hurricanes, and so they get back on their feet pretty quickly, which is good. But in terms of the pre-preparation, they're good at that as well.
Well, I think to a certain extent, I think you're absolutely correct. But this time, I don't know how many people are without any insurance because the stuff went up so high. Now, if you're in a condo place, I mean, from what Dan Janias has been telling me, if you're in a condo place, they'll just take whatever they have to, right? And then they'll just send you the bill. And a lot of these people that bought the place, they're on fixed income of some kind, and they're just piling out. So the places are dropping like rocks. Now I asked Carl yesterday or the day before. I said, you know, what's the bottom line on this? I mean, is it just going to be? Actually, it was yesterday. The bottom line is that a place that used to go for $350, you're going to puke it out to somebody at $150, and he's just going to self-insure because he won't be able to get it or doesn't want to pay for it. I mean, is that the end game here? I sure as hell hope not, but I don't know. I'm thinking that might be the end game. What do you think?
I imagine there's a lot of investors who are perfectly willing to swoop in there and buy up a lot of properties, but again, you can virtually count on periodically taking catastrophic losses.
Well, it's been 103 years for Tampa since the last had a close hit. It's been a while.
So what you're saying is some part of the states are less susceptible than others, and I would agree with that.
Well, I wonder if I had the math. This is where we need a guy like Hal. He loves math. It used to, you kind of, when we were Utes, you go down for spring break, you went to Lauderdale, you went to Daytona. There was stuff in Florida. Obviously, Miami was very well populated, and Homestead, to a disgusting extent, was pretty well populated with, people that just, it was the Arkansas of Florida. You know, one room, shacks, basically, with a window air conditioner. It was really awful, because my aunt owned a place down there. Well, her dad owned a place, and he died, and she ended up with it, and, $200 a month rent, that kind of stuff. But the place was brutally hot. There was nothing there. There was no scenery. There was no water. It was awful. But anyway, I just wonder, Kevin, even as bad as these things have been, if you were to take a ring, starting really North Carolina, even maybe a Virginia beach, hell, a few years ago, a hurricane hit New York. If you look at all the beachfront property, it runs all the way from basically the Cape around to, the end of Texas, for God's sake. There's really not much of it now, I don't think, that isn't all that populated. I mean, I know the area that the Bend area in Florida that it hit last week, they claim is one of the least populated. And I think there's some spots on the panhandle that are, not all that populated. But by and large, you've got, zillions of people and zillions of properties. Now, if you put them all with some degree of, risk, depending on where you are, not to mention you got the Keys, and you put some sort of a insurance pool for the whole coastal area that's liably hit by a hurricane and divide it up, I wonder what the losses are every year in total. I bet it's not 1%. And if everybody paid insurance based on, 1.5-2% in the whole area, I think you'd probably be okay. I mean, I don't know the total. When Fari moved down to the west coast of Florida, I said, Fari, they got these hurricanes down there, and he goes, there hasn't been a hurricane on the west coast. I'm fine on the west coast. They only hit the east coast. Well, we got three in a row that are hitting the west coast, right?
Because there are powerful forces of nature at work that say if Fari brags that he's not susceptible, it'll immediately swoop in and correct it.
Well, in our lifetime, once one got in the Gulf, it went to Texas, it went to Mexico, it might go to Louisiana, and maybe go to the northern Florida. You never really saw anybody turn right and head back to Florida. I mean, I never did. I'm sure there have been some, but that seemed like not the path. It either hit Florida on the west side or on the east side, made it past Cuba, got in the Gulf, and went north or kept going west. Well, you're talking, but this storm essentially started in the western Gulf, right? And it just went east the whole time. This is not an Atlantic hurricane, is it? Well, I guess it is because the Gulf is considered part of that. But it didn't start off Africa and make its way over, right? I mean, it started in the Gulf. So that's okay. Kind of strange. But I just wonder.
The point is, there will be a lot of property damage. There will be a lot of need for relief and so on. But, you know, Florida gets this on a regular basis. They evacuate pretty well when they need to. They recover pretty quickly. Like I said, they're good at this because they do it so often.
Well, what do you make of, you know, Carl's getting, pissed off is probably a good term. Of all,
Carl's pissed off?
I mean, the rules that basically aren't followed sort of anywhere in regards to codes and everything else. And, you know, Dan Janitis was in his area, was in a, I'll ask him about it again tomorrow, but his place was in the area, he got hit pretty good by, what was the one that hit 2 years ago? I forget the name of the damn thing. Anyway, it was further south, down by Fort Myers and so forth. And he said the places, there was a police station that just went up with all the new codes. There was one not very far away that was built 40 years ago, and the one with all the new codes was pretty much fine, and the other one was all wrecked. What do you have? You have bent corners, you have all these earthquake straps, the roof is tied down in more than one spot. And a lot of stuff, I think, is second membrane below the shingles. And I couldn't begin to do the building, but I'd like to get somebody on who would say that. But, you know, Carl claims if some house goes down or a roof flies off in a place that was built, you know, 5 years ago after the new codes, it lands on your house and totally wrecks it, nobody gives a crap. The inspector doesn't get spanked. The construction person doesn't get sued. The people who are the architect, nobody goes after him. I mean, it's like driving in Chicago. I mean, when have we reached this, you can do whatever you damn well please thing in our society, except if you're the wrong person, they focus on you. I don't know how do we get here where nobody cares?
I'm not sure how we got there, but it's not a good place to be because now breaking the law and getting caught is just considered a cost of doing business. And this is just not an acceptable way to run a country, to run a state, to run a city, whatever you're talking about for jurisdiction. The consequences have to be enough to make people stop.
I mean, how do you have a consequence that big for, you know, a Microsoft? Now we're talking about, last night I read something about maybe breaking up Google.
Walk the CEO, in cuffs and put him in jail.
I don't see that ever happening at a certain level of people.
No, I don't see it happening. But if you want people to stop with the violations stop considering them cost of doing business, that's what it's going to take.
Well, I think I would probably start that. The instead of the fine essentially going to the shareholders, it had nothing to do with the decision in the first place. The fine should be for the people who made the decision. I mean, you have, for instance, who knows where this Madigan trial is going to go, especially after that Supreme Court decision. But the idea that Madigan is somehow held personally liable for what he did, and that Commonwealth Edison, the company, had some kind of a negotiated settlement, where part of the settlement was they were going to testify against Madigan. Kevin, I can't think of anything, with my Catholic upbringing, I can't think of anything stupider in my life. Well, I can think of a few things, probably. How the hell does that go? How do the people that did the bribing, and there are people there with 2 feet, 2 arms, and a friggin' head. They did it. Oh, no, we get to negotiate ourselves out of this, give you guys a bunch of money in the state, and, oh, by the way, we'll testify against the guy you're after. Kevin, in what world, in what court would Solomon, Jesus Christ, you know, anybody along the line say this is the way you should do business in a court of law?
How far back do you suppose we need to go to get to the point where people would be appalled by it?
I think it's got to be 40, 50 years. Now, I love having Greg Pappas on Monday, but do you believe the point of view Greg comes up with sometimes?
Yeah.
I mean, I do believe it. Because
I even understand it, because his experience, he's not old enough to remember the day when integrity mattered more. And you know, certainly we had our no good nicks then too, and that's.
Andrew must have had an urge to play some music.
Yeah.
Whoops. I'm sorry.
I got up and danced immediately.
The show's not over yet. That's not all.
That is not all. No. So anyway, by the way, it's Andrew's birthday today. 24.
Oh, happy birthday, Andrew.
Thank you very much.
When he started the show, he was looking for direction. Now he's a manager at a fast food place. He's doing the show. He's doing other stuff. He's got the nice girlfriend. He made
a man out of him, huh?
Well, we all did. You know, talking to guys that are somewhat normal sometimes helps out.
Yeah, yeah. That'll do it.
Yeah, and then on the other hand, talking to us helps out too.
Yeah, well, yeah, a little bit. But yeah, you know, you wonder. The idea in anybody's mind that this mayor here has any business in this teachers union negotiation after being paid by them for all those years, Kevin, how does anybody even think that's true? Not to mention, do we think he's not getting paid by them anymore? I refuse to believe that. Somebody's getting some money somewhere, in my opinion. I mean, this is crazy.
Come on now, Tom. You're such a cynic.
Oh, I get to know people. Kevin, the most honest place I've ever been, well, two places. Actually, they kind of screwed my life up in terms of honesty. Going to Notre Dame screwed my life up in terms of honesty. I mean, you could have put a $200 bill on your desk the day you walked in as a freshman, and the day you left as a senior, it'd still be there. That's not educating people about the world, unfortunately.
Okay.
And the trading floor was so competitive that nobody, well, there always were a couple, like you say, people that did bent the rules a little bit. But by and large, people would rather lose every dime they had than renege on a trade and lose their reputation and lose their integrity. And that is obviously not the way the rest of the world works. And people think the people on the trading floor were thieves. No. Exactly the opposite. You could play in a golf tournament for a lot of money, and it would, God help anybody who, if they kicked the ball somewhere or did something, but the word ever got out. I mean, it was just this among this group. I don't know what they did to their insurance agent or what, but among this group, your word was your bond. Even today, somebody will say, "Well, you don't need to write that down." I said, "We just agreed. What do we got to write it down for?" People look at me like I got four heads. Maybe I do. But this, I mean, this whole mess, we don't know if we're on foot or horseback here. Now, the you can't believe the insurance companies. I mean, are they? I mean, I can't believe that Dan's ex-wife Marie, her cousin, 2 years, and they still don't know whether they're going to tear the place down or whether they're condemn it or fix it. And nobody's lived there for 2 years. What kind of insurance is that? I mean, you read this stuff and you just go, or you hear about it and you go, what's going on?
Yeah, you do.
And yet, Audrey's convinced that the messed up generation that might be around now, which may be the tail end of ours or whatever, she thinks a lot of these younger kids are a lot more like our parents were. They see this mess and they're trying to fix it. Now, I don't know, you on a lot of occasions have opined on the people that you deal with, the people that are working and not that you got to be working or anything like that, but the people who are taking the night classes and so forth and trying to better themselves are sort of a different, they're almost like a throwback in the way they look at the world. Is that true?
I see a lot of people who are really, will take the initiative personally to improve their lives. And it's really cool to see that. You know, I still think there's too many people that think life happens to them rather than they make life, you know, they make things happen in their lives. You know, to a certain extent, there is, you know, the term for it is locus of control, and you know, whether you have a high locus of control or locus of control, the whole idea is, you know, am I responsible for what happens in my life, or does life just come and I'm either a victim or I'm a fortunate son?
Yes, and, either way, and, could happen.
And you know, in reality, there's a little bit of each in there, but you know, but which way do people, as a point of view, tend to go? More towards the I'm in control, or more towards the I'm a victim, or I'm a victim of circumstances, probably the best way to put it. Because victim of circumstances can be a positive then.
Well, if you get shot in a war, it's an ending victim of circumstance.
Well, yeah, but the point is that same mindset, when it sees success, thinks that wasn't earned. You know, if you feel like you're always a victim, you always think somebody else either got over on the system or just had it fall in their lap. I mean, that's just a bad worldview, but it exists. Yeah, I see a lot of people, because you know, especially the adults who want to learn, the adults who want to improve themselves, so they come back to school, and they have families and all that. They're seizing control of their lives.
I would agree,
And that's a cool thing to see.
When we come back from break, let's talk a little bit about what might happen, just a little bit, and how the wealth, because I actually was talking to Andrew on the way in, and he was saying that to go to the post office and change, you know, your address or something, they want like 18, he'll tell us about it, but $18 to do something. And I said, Andrew, I mean, people like you and me and the people on the show have to understand that there's an awful lot of people in this country for $18, $20, $50, $100, what's the difference? And you're talking about, you know, NVIDIA put on $125 billion in market cap yesterday, and they're up another, you know, whatever they're up today, they're up another $160. I mean, this wealth bubble we're seeing, and the Fed now is right back to the before COVID money supply growth that they've put on since 2008, really since 2000, that led us down, is right back on that track. And I don't see anybody stopping them, either one of them getting in the White House. What did William Kennedy say? The events were in the saddle and they rode the men hard. Well, you know what? We're the men.
Yep.
Unfortunately. SP Futures down 4.
All right, hey, I'm going to jump off and then jump back on in the car.
Why don't you jump off and then jump back on when you get in the car?
Okay, that would work for me too.
All right. Be right back, Stocks and Jacks.
Hello, this is Tom Howe, the Chief. I think most of you know that I'm also the Chief Investment Officer at PTI Securities and Futures. There we invest for and help a wide variety of clients. And you know what? No two are the same. Some have legacy stocks, some concentration issues, some maybe embedded tax issues. The others might need or want some portfolio protection. There could be estate issues or maybe new family members. The point is that we are all unique and the portfolios should match. However, the last several years have seen a relatively one-way market. It seemed that all we needed was to be all in. No protection, no fixed income, just be all in, no matter who you are or what your risk profile or age. Most management firms love that. Take this and like it, no matter who you are. Be careful with that. You are not everybody. I think most see the market view going forward as maybe different than the one looking back, so your portfolio should reflect that. Maybe it's just as simple as your life station has changed. Towards that end, we are accepting some new clients needing a more personal approach and are interested in negotiating the future and not with a portfolio designed for the past. Find me at 312-663-4310. That's 312-663-4310.
Stocks. Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here. Right now.
Hello, welcome back to Stocks and Jacks. I'm Tom Andrew on the board. SP Futures down 5, NASDAQ Futures down 29. Again, we had a big up day yesterday after a down day the day before. All the stocks around the rest of the world were down yesterday until we went up. So let's see what they're doing today over in Europe. The DAX is up 57.3%. But FTSE up 20.2%. CAC around up 19.2%. The headline is European markets trade higher, but sentiment dampened. Dampened by volatility in China. We're not sure what that means. Over in China, with the Nikkei up 340, 5.8%. We got the Hang Seng down another 289. If we're down 9% yesterday, so that's 1.4. It's almost 11% in 2 days. Yikes. Shanghai down 230 at 6.6%. Now, just as to reload here, Chinese mainland market was down, was closed for like 7 or 8 days. I don't think it's a New Year's, some other holiday, some other thing going on. Meanwhile, the Hang Seng and the Nikkei were up almost every day. So everybody was convinced that when they opened, they were going to just splurge to the upside. So they were up like 4% yesterday, which is nowhere near enough of a splurge, caused Hang Seng to drop 9.5%, and now they're down 6% today. So they're actually lower than when they closed, with all these other guys now way higher. So it's volatile with a capital V, pretty much. Bonds unchanged at 4.03. The Bund unchanged, 2.23. Japan up 1 basis point, 0.94. Yesterday, again, we came back almost the exact same number that we were down the day before. I mean, virtually the same. Dow was up 126. S&P up 55. Day before, they were down 55. NASDAQ up 259. I think the day before, they were down 253. So, not any closer than that. Oil down 41 cents, 73.16. Brent down 36 cents, 76.82. Natural gas down 2 cents, 270. RBOB down a penny, 205. Gold up 560, 26.41. Was down some yesterday. Silver up 39 cents, 30.99. Silver's been the one that's been 1.5% moves almost every day. Copper down 3 cents, 4.41. We got foreign exchange. The euro pretty much unchanged, 109.6. The dollar's a little stronger there than it was a week ago. British pound, same thing, 130.8. It was 132. So the dollar's been a little stronger. Japan, 148.58. And with last but not least, crypto down 79 bucks. They're the only ones that are steady here, 62,103. Andrew, what do you got for us, Travis Weather Sports?
All right, it is 6:38 here in Chicago on October 9th. And starting off with just a little bit of sports here, we just got something to look forward to on the weekend. Of course, it is Bears playing football on Sunday, and that's going to be against the Jaguars at 8:30 in the morning. Other than that, that's all we got for sports. Moving on to Chicago weather, it is currently 50 degrees right now. A little bit cooler, but we're going to heat up throughout the day. We have plenty of sun. We're going to have a high of 68. Over in Phoenix, they don't have as much sun. A little bit of a mix of partly cloudy today. But we do have a new record set today, as we're currently at 79 degrees. We have a high of 104, and that is going to break a record set in 1996 of 103 for the October 9th.
That's unbelievable, isn't it?
Yeah, that is crazy, especially for October.
Yeah.
But finally, for Chicago traffic, things are always crazy there. On the inbound expressways, traffic is building. On the inbound Eisenhower, there was an earlier accident that looks to have been cleared, but traffic is still built around it. That is heading east before Illinois 171, or just around First Avenue. So that is all I got. Back to you, Chief.
So, Kevin, what religion are you when you start talking about whether if stuff happens? I'll say if stuff happens, it's either your fault or somebody else's fault. What religion are you?
The Church of What's Happening Now?
It's not on my list. I got a huge list here of religions and when bleep happens. Fundamentalism. If bleep happens, you will go to hell unless you are born again. Fundamentalist 2. If bleep happens to a televangelist, it's okay. Fundamentalism 3. Bleep must be born again. Judaism. Why does this bleep always happen to us? Catholicism. If bleep happens, you deserve it.
That's well right.
Yeah. Confucianism. Confucians say bleep happens. Zen Buddhism.
So
bleep is and is not. That's where you are, I think. It is and it is
not. Yeah,
isn't.
I think so. I think I could be a Buddhist then.
A Zen Buddhist too. What is the sound of bleep happening? This thing's kind of funny.
Is there one that's that says if bleep happens in the forest, did it really happen? I don't know. If a tree falls in the forest, can you hear it?
Christian Science
theory.
Christian Science too. Bleep happening is all in your mind.
I see. Okay.
No, then the Quakers. Well, let's not fight over this bleep.
Okay.
Whoever did this is pretty clever.
Yeah, there's some pretty, there's enough shreds of truth in each one to make it good. Hey, we had sort of an abbreviated sports report, but there's some interesting stuff happening, actually. There's
without a doubt
four baseball games today, four baseball playoff games. The Dodgers, with their umpty-gazillion payroll, are on the brink of elimination and doing a bullpen game today because their pitching staff is depleted. Oh my goodness! You have the Blackhawks started last night. I can't believe real hockey, is underway.
It's not underway because I can't watch it, even though I'm paying. Oh, I just got my cable bill just went up. They're not into the new station yet.
Oh, okay. Well, we go back to the if the Blackhawks played a game and it wasn't on television in Chicago, did it really happen?
Well, you know, the group, the Reinsdorf. Wirtz cabal that took this thing from NBC, which went forever, which has a backup station when the Bulls and the Blackhawks are both on. But now it's some new station that nobody can get. Evidently, if you have an antenna, you can get it from South Bend or someplace. But I think only one cable company, DirecTV, is into it. They're signed up for it. But I don't think any cable company is. So they're basically not on. And they just decided.
Yeah, all I've seen of it on Xfinity is just a marker where NBC Sports Chicago was that says this station doesn't exist now.
They haven't
just blown it off of the menu either. So apparently they're holding a spot negotiating.
Well, the new station started. They put one together, so it's been on.
Oh yeah, but they still have to cut their deals with the. The companies who might carry it—that's not just a cable station. That can include the streaming services like YouTube TV and Tubi and all of those. They'll have to cut deals with them as well.
Kevin, it's really I don't know why it's so easy for me now. Who were the playoffs? Was it the last year's basketball or hockey, whatever it was, the semifinal round ended so early that it was like 7 or 8 days before the finals started. Was that basketball? Or I think it might have been. If I don't see the Thursday night game in pro football, if it's on, I'll watch it. I make it interesting. If it's not on, I don't even care if it existed, to be honest with you. I mean, the same thing with the Irish. I couldn't watch them that 1 week. I could care if they played. Boy, is that getting grumpy or what? I mean,
you are a grumpy old man, but yeah, look, if you don't want to be available, that's fine. If you don't want to be, I don't have to buy what you're selling. Now, it turns out in my case, my Xfinity subscription includes. Peacock, so I was able to watch the game. But strangely, the app that you can access on your your cable box, basically, that didn't work for me in the premium version of Peacock. But I could log on my computer and do that, and then just plug it into the TV. So that was kind of a strange little thing.
Well, Audrey has. She goes, "Don't worry, I can get it on Prime." Well, it was on Prime Plus. Well, actually, it was on I told her it was on Prime Plus. Evidently, it was on So my cable bill just went. By the way, I'm canceling these idiots. Just went to $320. And I get. I don't have any. I don't have HBO. I don't have any porn stations. I don't have anything. I just have. I have the. Whatever the internet, and I got the cable, and it's not that good. So now I need what? I need Peacock Plus. I need Prime Plus. I need Apple Plus. So I need three more things on top of my $320. By the way, there wasn't supposed to be any commercial in cable.
that ship sailed a long time
ago.
That ship is
going by Mars.
That's a ghost ship by now. We've been talking about this since the Matt Weber days of how much are people going to go a la carte? It's really. If you want to cancel your cable entertainment package, if you have a smart TV and and you can just have, you know, whether it's Comcast/Xfinity or some other carrier, if you just bring in internet with enough bandwidth, you can get rid of all of that cable, and they know it. You know, if you look into if you look at what Comcast is doing, they're not pushing their cable entertainment packages. They're totally willing to let people pay an arm, and this includes me too, because I don't have great options at the moment, but I do have options that I need to explore. But that's a cash cow business for them. It's not growing, but it is throwing off a lot of money, and that's money that they're investing in their wireless business. And I'm not just talking about wireless telephones. I'm talking about, you know, 5G, streaming entertainment packages, and, you know, all of that. And they know the model's shifting, and they want to squeeze as much out of the old way as they can before it just completely dies out. It's a few years from that, but it's going to get there. And that's kind of standard, you know, growth share matrix product analysis.
I just I've had this discussion. No point in going through it again. It to me, if I have the thing coming into my house, it's either Comcast or Xfinity or Astound, whatever the hell it is. The idea that I can show these guys I can break off half of it, they're just going to raise the price of the other half.
Well, yeah, they will, accept that they have to compete with alternatives there too. So, for example, in areas that have 5G coverage, good consistent 5G coverage, cellular companies are internet gateways. You know, like you can go to AT&T has it. T-Mobile advertises it a lot. For $50 or $55 a month, and it's locked in for, you know, a pretty good period of time. You can get your everything out of the air using the 5G
what's
technology
the capa- what's
with
the capacity
more
on that?
Bandwidth and
yeah. But what's the capacity of that? I refuse to believe. Maybe I should. But we're going to talk about something else. If 100,000 people would in 2 miles of me are all watching the Super Bowl, you mean every single person can get it off this 5G? It's clear as a bell.
But have I ever sent you anything with an explanation of how 5G works?
Well, all I know is in my neighborhood, I could barely get the internet on my phone from AT&T. It's so crummy.
First of all, it depends on your phone and if your phone is 5G compatible, but. It uses different bands for the transmissions, and so you get lower latency, you get faster speeds, more capacity, but it also has
You're coming in and out. I know you're on the road. Hey, let's shift gears here a little bit to the even though you're probably not hearing what I'm saying. Let's shift gears here a little bit to Kevin sent around, and we should probably send out. Kevin, I didn't hear a word you're saying.
It's almost like establishing a wired connection.
Wherever you're at, we're getting like every other word. So I don't know if you can hear me, but I was telling everybody the thing you sent around yesterday.
Well, sorry about that. Around yesterday, I sent a couple of things.
But while we couldn't hear you, I changed the topic.
Oh, okay. So what's the new topic?
The thing you sent around yesterday about it probably doesn't surprise the bright people who listen to the show, but right now people from the investment community have seen this explosion of money and in payment and all this other stuff in college sports, and they're saying, let's just take it totally away from college sports. So some, you know, an investment banking group is saying, look, let us invest in Notre Dame football, let us invest in Alabama football, and let's get 70 teams out and actually make a college professional football league and, like, do it right and really make a bunch of dough. And I guess my question is, everybody can kind of imagine, maybe Kevin can expound and we can hear him, but at what point here do we say, this is not the tax-free model. If you guys want to do that, this ain't happening. that okay, you can keep your church and your school Notre Dame, but this, if your football team becomes the Bears, it's not an extracurricular activity in terms of taxes. Are we about to jump that board here, Kevin, or no?
It sounds like we are within a few years of doing that, it's a shame, just because it's a sea change in it. But in some ways, it's just an acknowledgement of where we've gotten anyway, and a reorganization of it. It would do, as I've been predicting, it would make the players, get directly paid by their schools, as so they become employees, and I think that's going to happen. That won't preclude some of the other income sources that they have, but it won't eliminate them either. It won't. It will make them less necessary. But then you also. You see someone like Juju Watkins at the basketball player at Southern California, young woman, and she just signed an extended deal with Nike now that makes her a high-paid endorsement personality. So just when you thought Caitlin Clark was everything that there was to know about women's basketball, it turns out Juju Watkins is.
You know, I should know this. I'm asking this very naive
question. There's so much money in this. There's so much money in this, and there has been for a long time. So when you say acknowledging the explosion, I think part of that is...
Kevin, wherever you are, we're getting every other word.
Not that acknowledged in the past.
We're getting every other... I'm
Miles, Michigan. It should be better than this.
It's not. We might have to bring Russell in early, because, Kevin, we can't hear you at all. Basically,
I'm here. I'm rescuing you.
Yes. Well, we need rescue. Kevin, you have to get to a spot where we can hear you and call back or something. So, Russell, I don't know.
Kevin, we love you. Have a great week.
Yeah.
So there's a young lady on here with us, Tom. You can't see it because I know you don't look at the Zoom screen. But we do have a guest. So
is she from Indiana? Is she from Indiana, or is she family?
She's not family. She's not one of my daughters. So
okay. Is that good? Is that good or bad?
I don't know. You can ask her. Keep in mind, she only sees me when I'm playing the role as professor and not my normal curmudgeonly self. But you were getting ready to try and ask me a question, and then we can segue into.
I was just wondering when the college. How's this all going to? When is this model going to break? I don't know if you got the thing Kevin sent around yesterday regarding.
I did see that, and you guys are trying to pull me into a topic that's going to get me in trouble, aren't you?
No, it's just.
I'm kidding when I say.
No,
that.
The interesting part is we were at dinner the other night, and I was mentioning.
Yes, we were at dinner the other night.
I was mentioning to you and Dan and wherever your young lady friend is, there's a guy here in Chicago that's got to be, well, he's way older than me. Rick Talender was on the Sports Writers on TV. He was a writer for, I believe, the Sun-Times for a real long time, or Daily News, one of the two. And I think he still writes some, but he wrote a book just to tell you how much older he is. He played for Northwestern. He played against O.J. Simpson. And
really?
Yeah. And he goes, O.J. Simpson comes out on the field, and everybody looks at him and goes, "What the hell?" He was bigger than half the Northwestern line.
He was a monster for a
He's bigger than most of the
little quick guys. Yeah,
he's bigger than most of the Northwestern linemen. Mm-hmm. And then he goes, and nobody at Northwestern had a head size, his helmet size, as big as his either. Jesus.
You'd think a guy that big would not have needed to use a knife.
You would think, but these are crimes of rage. You know what it is.
Wait
a minute! If the glove don't fit, you must acquit.
I know. So you know that's another reason. Look, they should just put him on the stand, and Rob Kardashian should have put him up there and said, "Hey,
how did he become the lead attorney when it was the black guy?"
He and Rob Kardashian are best friends. In fact, one of the Kardashian girls is actually O.J. Simpson's daughter, because there was some weirdness going on there. Yeah, Khloe.
Oh, God.
Kiana, who's sitting across from me right now, just mouthed Chloe. And in fact, I think O.J. Simpson, like, left her things in his will. So, and she's probably the least attractive of the Kardashian sisters as well.
You know what? I somehow have dodged for 25 years this entire Kardashian thing.
I have, too. I honest to God, never heard any of them speak.
Me neither. I have no idea what show they did. Yeah. All I know is the name's out there, and they're good for being famous.
10 years ago, I was teaching Benedictine, and I asked the students, I was like, what is so, you know, what has this woman done? And they, well, she's just super cool. She's just so, that was all they would say. So there you go. I really don't want to talk about the Kardashians.
Well, maybe you could do that too. What does he teach? What difference does it make what he teaches? He's too super cool.
That's why it should be very popular here.
Anyway, to finish the story about Rick Towner, he wrote this book. Uh-huh. He wrote this book, has to be. Andrew, see if you can find Rick Towner's book, when it was published. I'm going to say 35 years ago. In the last chapter, he predicted that somewhere down the line, you're going to end up with a certain number of essentially college-sponsored professional teams where people either don't have to go to class or they have a community college.
They don't go to class.
Yeah, something like that. Or, Kevin says the people, like in grad school, I mean, the NCAA has done some stuff for people in the low end undergrad to be making progress towards their degree, or else there's a problem.
Now, they all take online classes. In fact, Joe Burrow, and I'm bad with names. He was at LSU, right?
I believe so.
Somebody asked him when he went pro if he was going to miss the college experience, and he said he never set foot in a classroom when he was at LSU. That every single class he took was online.
Was this part of the COVID mess though?
It may have had some of it to do with that. You're absolutely right.
Yeah, I think it probably.
But not all of it.
But Kevin says, like the grad students you bring in after, who's the guy who's playing in his seventh year? Was he Belushi? 7 years down the drain in Animal House.
The guy at Oklahoma State.
Yeah, but he had like two COVID years, then a redshirt year, and something. But anyway,
he's playing like crap too. You'd think 25 years old, he could beat up on these kids.
Well, anyway, Rick Towner said you're going to end up with essentially college-sponsored professional teams for the colleges that want to do it, and the rest of them are going to go right back to the old model where they're people just go to college and play football or basketball with the college down the road. You know, basically for yucks.
Yep, and then what's going to happen when you do that, and you know, this is a continuation of what you know we're talking about Saturday night, but I think what's going to happen is if, you know, let's throw Indiana out because they're a Big Ten school, but, you know, I got my PhD at a Big 12 school, and I got I had 7.5 years of undergrad at Memphis State, which I eventually got out of. And Oklahoma State and Memphis State would probably be relegated to the non-professional level. I'm going to give two craps about the Ohio State Michigan game if whatever colleges I root for have nothing to do, you know, if they're not in the same class at all. Well, so I really think I think what'll end, if they do end up in a split like that, I don't think it will be terribly successful.
I don't know about the success part.
I was thinking about it on the drive home after.
But, when I was at Notre Dame, I had five classes with Dave Casper, all pro tight end. I mean, they were part of the place, and they were getting a degree.
Mm-hmm.
And
I had a class with Anthony Hardaway.
There you go. And, Dan, my brother,
was a six-year senior, and he was a freshman. But
my brother Dan had a bunch of classes with Joe Montana.
Oh, Joe. He's the best.
Oh, yeah. Was he the coolest or what?
He's the coolest. He didn't even have to throw a touchdown.
But anyway, let's turn.
Hello, Kiana. Stop texting.
Yeah. I want to ask you, don't tie this into your school or whatever. I want to ask Kiana, when you look at the significance of this, you know, and you have a couple of guys you have a couple of beers with, not that I ever do that, and you'll say, and they'll say, oh, God, you know, the Pac-10 had to fold up and go to the Big Ten because they make $25 million more a year in the Big Ten network.
Yeah.
You could probably do this, but ask Cam, what do you suppose the total budget is of UCLA?
Oh, I I know the. Are you asking me or are you asking Kiana?
Well, let her answer first.
Yeah. What do you think that he loves doing this?
Oh. Okay. I don't know a ton, but I do know IU beat UCLA, which was huge. So considering that, I don't even know what IU's budget would be.
Because the Big Tens are right there. Big Tens are right there. I'll tell you, UCLA's budget, their total budget is $11.2 billion.
Oh, my God.
So when you talk about, million more.
Ours is like that.
Wisconsin and Illinois are both about 7.8. I didn't look yours up, but I'll bet you're close.
Okay, so what's their football budget at UCLA? I'm going to give...
He was asking the whole school's budget.
Yeah, the whole school's budget.
Whole school's budget? It has to at least be, if we're in that, it has to be like 25 at least.
It's $11.2 billion.
Billion. Where and so when you know it's in the billions, and you know if the athletic department's bringing in $100 million a year, that they're taking care of themselves. But that's only I've never fully run the numbers, but I feel like 25 schools, their athletic departments actually pay for themselves, and then everybody else it doesn't. Memphis runs a deficit every single year. They have every year, since I went to school there. Athletic department does, even when the teams, even when the basketball team's gone to the Final Four.
Well, it's
sports is a cost center for most universities, but they feel like they have to have it because other schools have it.
Other schools allegedly, well, some schools make money, especially if you count the money that some of the insane alumnas.
Which is not going to the school anymore.
Some schools, yes, some no. You're right, by the way. That's a big difference. Notre Dame, you had to get money to the general fund to get your tickets, where some other schools you give money to the athletic department. You never did that at Notre Dame. I think they're unusual in that. Anyway,
Memphis, you had to do something like that too.
Anyway, Keanu, what are the most interesting things you've learned from Professor Russell, economics?
There's a lot that I don't think I should publicly air.
Oh, God.
no.
Oh, my God.
What's probably been more recently the biggest takeaway as I'm entering into the job market and into all this is learning how to articulate myself on my feet, because obviously a lot of these finance interviews are incredibly intimidating, and they're going to corner you so that you don't know the information. And so you have like two options of either totally making stuff up or at least applying some sort of a thought process. And so I think he's really helped, at least personally, like strengthen my mindset on like that approach and how I go about that method. But then of course I also, it's Professor Rhodes. You also learn how to just bluff certain things because it's not that important is what he would say.
You're a grad student, right?
No, I'm an undergraduate senior.
She's president of our finance club.
Wow.
And we were going to do some things where we do this with the whole finance club. Everybody started getting nervous, but I think Kiana already realizes there's nothing to be nervous about here. And I said, well, then you need to lead by example and be the first one to do this.
Well, one thing I think
that's why she's here right now.
If I could give you just one piece of advice. When you're doing well in the finance group like that, you've probably touched on an awful lot of things that you need to know. You don't want to memorize them all or anything like that, but you should have a pretty good enough background where if a company does something and something, you can either find the detail of that or actually call your old professor and say, okay, how can I brush up on this, because they're going to get... You should have been exposed to enough stuff that you should never feel intimidated. In my opinion, is that fair, Russell?
That's absolutely. I mean, I think that's perfectly stated.
Yeah.
I mean, don't feel intimidated. Whatever they want you to learn, you can learn in a week if you have to, because you have all the background. At least you've heard of it before, and you can get there.
And that's you can always Professor Rhodes or show up on his. I do Saturday office hours for current and former students, and I have former students show up at it all the time. So
yeah, I mean,
a
it's
lot
a,
of that.
I'm not going to quiz you about your future, but I got my MBA, and what it did is that I never felt intimidated any place I was. I mean, there was things they knew more than me, but in a week later they didn't.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah, that's some good points there.
Yeah, I mean it's because that's why you're there. You're there to be exposed to all this stuff, and you learn that. You know, I kind of learned where they were going with this is my stepfather took the executive program at the University of Chicago. And these are guys that are out of school, what, how many years, Russell? 25 years. And they're going to this executive program. They're learning all this stuff like regression analysis and, you know, quadratic analysis and all this kind of stuff. And the professor goes, I don't expect you to be able to solve this problem. I just want to make sure there's somebody walks into your office next week and starts talking about it, you know what he's talking about. And by the way, you know, and you can find out about it. You can always call me. So I don't want anybody. I don't want anybody who comes out of this class to ever be intimidated by any of these idiots. So, you know, that's the life, isn't it, Russell?
It is. That's exactly that's what I'm trying to do, to the best of my ability.
So, what in terms of what's going on countrywide in the economic policy of either this administration or the one coming in, what stands out to most to you? I mean, and I'm going to ask you about the economic hit. What do you think is going to happen to Florida after this storm hits?
He's on you, Kiana.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. I mean, obviously, an election year, it opens up new opportunities. And so I think right now, a lot of my, like, friends, like, what we've been talking about is just, like, of course, student debt is of mind. And so what policies are and aren't going to be in place in those regards. But then I think a lot of it is just like the long-term cost of living is going up, housing prices are going up. Like in a few years, those are all things that we're going to be caring a lot more about. And so we're kind of just looking at like in the long-term, not even long-term, like mid-term, I would say like 10 years, who's going to be able to have the greatest economic benefits for us? So I think that's definitely something that we've all been talking about and looking more into just because, you know, it's nerve-wracking realizing that you're going to have to, like, pay for your own stuff and buy a house soon and, like, go through that whole process. And so now that it's something more on our radars, we're all leaning in more to just figure out what are going to be those long-term and short-term benefits. But then to your point about, you know, of course we're experiencing lots of natural disasters right now. I think, if I'm being really honest, a lot of my generation, we're locked, like, my friends right now, we're locked in the Midwest, so we're not personally experiencing that impact. However, it goes to, I think, that larger point that we've all been more considerate of, which goes to climate change, and it goes to how many more of these natural disasters are we going to be experiencing? What are the plans in place? But also, what are the preventions that we can take? So I think right now that's kind of where some of our mindsets are headed.
It is interesting when, I mean, I don't expect anybody, Russell and my, well, I'm not going to accuse Russell of being as old as me, but people forget that, you forget because you weren't here, that during the Depression, one of the biggest climate disasters ever hit this country happened with the Dust Bowl. That was a drought for how many years? There were an entire state, basically, all the topsoil ended up in other states, right, Russell?
Yeah, it was just a... the one thing about weather is, and the one thing about climate is it constantly is changing. It changes every day. But we do go through natural patterns where, you know, the climate is less than favorable. You know, we've had instances historically where you get a big volcano eruption that blocks out a little bit of the sun, lowers the temperature for a while, ruins crops for a while. We've been through a lot of these things before. It just does seem like they're a bit more frequent. And, I think that all the global warming and the climate change and everything is due to things that people have done. But things are definitely getting more volatile as far as the weather goes. The second of three hurricanes, and you heard it here first. My youngest daughter says we are going to get a third one. We got to get her on the radio to talk about it.
This is number two.
This is number two. She was saying this a week ago. She's going to give you a second one. They're going to a really big third one.
Why don't you, if you do me a favor, ask her. When when can we expect the water in the Gulf to start cooling off a little? It's already damn near the middle of October.
Yeah. And you want to hear kind of a funny side effect of all of this? You were around when Galveston got blown away.
I read the book. I read the book.
Well, okay. Well, no, but my parents used to go to Galveston Beach.
Wait a minute. Galveston was 1908 or something.
No. There was another one that hit in the 60s.
Okay.
And the one that hit in the 60s, like, screwed up the beach so much that you could see oil pipelines that had been buried. It just really obliterated the beach, and it ruined the water. The water was just kind of, you didn't want to go to the beach there anymore. And apparently, Galveston Beach's water, one reason or another, has completely cleared up this year. And I don't know if it has to do with how severe those hurricanes were. So now we can go to the beach in Texas since Florida's gone.
Wow. There's a book. The name of the book is Isaac Storm.
Yeah.
It had to do with the Galveston hurricane in 19, I don't know, somewhere. Andrew, look that up. When was the huge Galveston, and how the guy who was the head meteorological guy did not call for an evacuation, even though the people in Cuba noticed it go by, and there's something to do with the water before a hurricane hits is absolutely glass, almost eerily calm until it started. And he had all kinds of hints where he should do, and he didn't. Then when the thing hit, only people in, like, reinforced buildings, like third floor, survived, because the storm surge went across, like, the whole island. It's a good one. You ever been to a SIBO, had one of those sort of boondoggle things? And I was, I was chairman of the marketing committee for a while, so I always had to go to these things, and Audrey would have to come with, because they always brought the wives of the other guys. And so we're staying in, was it Longboat Key? It's just south of Tampa. It's not a key down in the Keys, but...
It's that place in Port... I know where you're talking about.
It's maybe 25 miles south of Tampa Airport, maybe 30 or 40, yeah, somewhere. So there's like one two-lane road to get on this island. The island can't be... Its highest part in the middle of the golf course can't be 8 feet above the water. And I'm sitting there thinking, what the hell? So all of a sudden, there's this... This lightning storm, the likes of what you've never seen. Roger keeps waking me up. Did you see that one? No, I can't really. There's no replay on a lightning bolt. I mean, But anyway, it was this. And I'm thinking, what if we had to get off this friggin' island? There's a two-lane road
out here.
You're
stuck.
That thing.
There's a giant causeway bridge in Tampa, and I've driven across it. And I've seen video of people trying to drive across it, and it's half underwater now. God knows what's going to happen when the sun comes up.
Well, let's get back to Keanu. What do you?
I want to deviate to Keanu, and I told her we were gonna get her perspective, and I really like this idea because it's mine. But I wanted to get her perspective on what people her age outside of the U.S. think about the United States, because she studied in Australia last spring.
Really? Hey, good for
you. And yeah, and that's one of the main reasons I wanted to bring her on, was just to get a perspective and hear what people think about us. You know, I'll go over there for a few days for work, and everybody's smiley and nice. But if you spend 3 or 4 months with people, they start to tell you what they really think. So, what do they really think of us, Keanu? Do they look up to us? They look down at us? Do they just laugh at us? What? I know what I would do.
I love that question. There's like a couple different angles to kind of go at it from, because there's the initial, they think all Americans are crazy, and that's so fair and so valid. They're boggled by the way that we emphasize politics in our culture, and our work culture as well, and just how much stress we put on ourselves. And so there's definitely that angle to it, being an American. They think we're crazy, we're overworked, and But on the flip side, I think something that I did learn a bit more about, and back to one of Tom's questions this morning, is that they really lean into our politics. Yes, they think it's crazy that we know each other's political stances and where we believe and all the places that we all take within issues and everything, However, like, our presidential election affects them and affects their economy significantly. And I think realizing that as American kind of, I won't say it doesn't help with your American ego where you just think you're the best in the world and this and that, but it definitely puts a pressure on you as a voter, I would say, to A, like, get out there and vote, but also recognize, like, you're not just voting for yourself, for your country, for this and that, but it's also, like, we have a global impact as U.S. citizens that I don't think we fully... I didn't know that before I went over there and had multiple conversations about it, so...
Well, I'm happy you picked up that view of the world, because you see the politics that's going on here, and this is just me talking, this is not... I think that we have an amazing responsibility. I mean, look at the difference in the... There's... I don't know how much you've read ancient history or something, but there was something called the Pax Romana. When Rome was in charge, the world was, other than skirmishes here and there, was pretty much at peace for, what, 200-300 years, Russell? And as soon as they were gone, and before they were around, you know, the world was a bleep storm. And this has been known to a lot of people, even though last few years things are going crazier. After World War II has been the Pax Americana, where as much as people don't want to spend money on military and all that kind of stuff, the fact is we've sort of kept the world somewhat sane for the last 70 years or 60 years. And I think if we ever decide we destroy from within, I don't think you're going to recognize this world. I mean, we're the glue that's holding the place together, and a lot of, not that we're doing a really good job or totally together, but I can't imagine a world if America goes down. Can you?
Oh gosh, no. I mean, you end up with different spheres of power.
Yeah.
And you end up with, you know, China. If it weren't for us, China would run roughshod over everybody else in the South China Sea area.
Oh sure.
Mm-hmm.
They would. Yeah. And what do people in Australia think about China? Because, you know, I feel like we're not paying as close attention to them as we should, and we talk about them a lot, but I still don't think we realize that their aspirations are to unseat us in the long run. Whereas Australia trade, you know, is tied in with them a little bit more geographically and economically. I mean, what do they think of them, or what do they think of them? And you hate to say China, it's more of what do they think of the Communist Party, because they're two different entities, actually.
You know, it's funny that we say that, like, this is where it goes back to that tie between the U.S. and Australia, because what's fascinating, so out in the outback, like the very central part of Australia, in Alice Springs, there are tons of Americans. Tons. And you're, like, baffled by it. You'd think it's, like, an inner colony or something. But the reason why is because CIA, some government authority, has a base there, where they essentially keep track of China.
They have a listening station. Isn't that what they call it? Yeah.
I think so. So they've got, like, in the outback desert, it's insane, the terrain, like, and it's really the only people who live there are the natives, the aboriginal people. However, like I said, the U.S. government has something going on there. They also have a station out in New Zealand, in Christchurch.
Wow.
And so there's, and they you know, and so we say, like, oh, you know, it's all Australia. And this is where, again, it pulls back to, like, the U.S. having those ties, because we have that capacity and the resource and, honestly, the interest. I think Australians are really good at, in my experience, I would say they're really good at hiding behind us and complying with the United States and complying with our initiatives and our mindsets versus really taking a strong stance either for or against China. I know, like, their visa policies are a lot different than ours in regards to just general, like, immigration. And so there's, like, at University of Sydney, where I studied at, there is a huge population of exchange students from different parts of China, you know, Singapore, all over. So it's definitely interesting to observe, I think. And I would, like, start dishing stuff back, because when, you know, people would say stuff about Americans, you know, oh, you're crazy, oh, this and that, you know, laugh about our politics. I'm like, if we didn't have the stances we did, or if we didn't do the initiatives that we did, you could not stand there and make those remarks, you know?
Yeah, Kenna, this is a Russell, don't answer this.
Yes, sir.
I don't know how many Chinese students they have in Indiana. There's a lot of them in Illinois. We've heard from time to time on the show that all the students from China, because they pay full board tuition, that's why there's so many in Illinois, that they're being watched. And there's actually, you know, Communist Party cells here that keep track of the students and what they write and all that kind of stuff. Have you ever seen anything like that, either over there or here, where you sense that? I mean, I imagine you have some Chinese friends.
You know, I can't tell you with confidence that I really saw or experienced that. I think the closest thing I can, and I don't even know if that'd be a good example, is so the biggest massacre that I experienced while I was there was there's at Bondi Junction, there is a stabbing. And it's awful, and it killed multiple people. And in it was a University of Sydney exchange student from China. And so I think that was a little bit interesting because you saw that whole community come together to kind of congregate and, like, pay respect to the student who had passed. And so, like I said, I don't think I have a strong answer, though, in regards to if I felt like they were being watched. I will say the integration is just interesting. Like, University of Sydney is a commuter school in Australia. Kids don't really go, they don't move away to study.
Oh, really? It's all commuter? It's interesting.
Mm-hmm. Primarily. There's one school out in Canberra, which is where the capital is, and it's kind of like middle of nowhere. It's like 4 hours inland. And there you board, but everywhere else you don't. And so I think that there is, like, a lack of integration when it comes to, like, local Aussie students and exchange students, and then particularly those who are studying full-time. Like, it was a lot easier for us who were there, like, as Americans, like, on a short-term exchange, because we were able to get immersed into clubs, into, like, random stuff like that, and really get to know Aussies that way, versus, like, in my experience, it felt like they were more, you know.
Well, did you stay in a dorm or with a family?
I stayed in a dormitory, yeah.
So there are dorms for exchange students, essentially.
Yeah, it's kind of like student apartments. So, okay. Yeah.
The reason why I'm dying to hear this is because a long time ago, when I was at Pullman, we actually did a contract for railroad cars. They were using Pullman patents with Goninen. You ever heard that name over there? It's the name of they made the railroad cars over there at the time. I don't know if they're still around. But some of the guys I knew from the plant went over there for like 6 months for varying stages. First, an engineer went over, then a guy went over for fabrication, and a guy went over for, and they loved it. They said, you know, the people were terrific. And the one guy told me that they rented this house, and all the garbage guys, they were all these totally buff dudes, and they'd come running by, and they'd run the whole route, throwing the garbage into the trucks. He goes, "Why are you guys running?" "Well, because if we can get done 2 hours early, we get to go to rugby practice and leave early." After they ran all day long, he says these guys were strong as oxes and they were in great shape. They were all fired up to go to rugby practice, so they would run their entire garbage route in the morning. Guys are into their sports over there, aren't they?
Oh, incredibly. Rugby's huge. AFL, which is like their version of football, is really big. Like all the sports, like surfing, obviously is genuinely a huge part of their culture, which is incredible. If you're not in like a 5:30 a.m. run club, what are you doing? It's really incredible how much, like, how passionate they are. We were at a horse race, and like they were treating it like an American football game, like absolutely going crazy. Whereas, like, I don't know if you go to like a race here, we used to go to like Arlington in Chicago, you would never see that kind of behavior. Like, you'd be excited if your horse wins, but they just go absolutely insane.
Well, not that long ago, horse racing was the number one attended sport in the U.S., not football and baseball. It wasn't that long ago. I mean, a while ago. But so, what courses did you like? Did you like the best? I mean, are you in more of a business economics or arts and letters economics? I mean, are you behavioral economics, business economics? Where are you?
She's finance.
Yeah, definitely more. Yeah.
Oh, fine. Well, okay. So you're more in the business school.
Yeah, I'm finance. You always call me an economist. I'm finance.
Well, you're kind of a business economist sort of dude.
I know, but I'm finance.
The reason why I ask you is when I went to school, there were two economics degrees. One was in the business school, and one was in the arts and letters school. And I was the arts and letters guy. Which was a pain because I had to take two semesters of a language, and I'm horrible in language. So, but other than that, it was okay. And then even at University of Chicago, I took like eight or nine classes in the economics school because you had to take 20 classes no matter where they were, and I found that fascinating. Totally different world in the economics side or the business side in terms of thought. And that's why Russell and I like talking to each other so much, because he's on one side and I'm kind of on the other. And
that's awesome.
So what were your favorite courses?
I did an international entrepreneurship class.
Wow.
And I loved it. It was really unique because it hit onto those sides that I don't think get talked about often in my courses here at the Kelley School of Business, where they actually talked about what are the factors that you're looking for when you go international, and how much of an impact, like, the culture, the local economy, like, down to, like, who would your employees be if it's a brick-and-mortar store? And so the whole way that the course was built out, I really enjoyed. It was interesting because, in my experience, only science courses have their classes set up this way, but essentially you attend a lecture, and then on top of it, you go to a tutorial with a tutor, and then you prepare more and you do more homework-related assignments there. And so that built up, I actually really enjoyed, and I enjoyed it especially as a business student because we dove into so many cases every single week. And so the depth of a curriculum that I was getting and the width of it was really, I mean, it's something I hadn't gotten to experience before. So I would say that had to have been one of my favorite classes.
You've got me insanely interested here. What's the difference between putting a business in China versus putting one in Britain?
Yeah, and that's just it. You're looking at what are our trade agreements with each of those countries if you're shipping products back and forth. What is where in China, where in Britain are you looking at? So you're running like local socio-demographics to like really nail down your clientele. If, you know, you're selling, I don't know, depending on what the product that you're selling is that accessible for their market? Is it something that would have the draw there?
How did the professor learn all this stuff? How would you even learn that stuff?
University of Sydney, Tom. I don't know.
Oh, this is one in Sydney. Okay.
Yeah.
All right. I mean,
that's not me.
I was going to say, how the hell would anybody here know that? I mean, God. That's fascinating. I mean, I've never even heard of a course like that here. Have you, Russell?
I have it. Like, the school's over in the UK, but not here.
I tell you what, that's fascinating. Well, if you make one up, I want to audit it. I'd love to be in it.
I'm already making up a class that you're going to have to come guest lecture at.
Oh, God. Oh,
which is non-quantitative derivatives.
Do I get to be grumpy?
Always grumpy. You're just going to be you.
All right. Let's.
Is up with the fascination on wanting to be grumpy professors?
We're grumpy old people. We're grumpy old men. That's what we are.
Yeah. And that's what you want to find a guy that when they get to be our age is like us, because you can always count on them at least.
Yeah, you know, we're consistently.
Yeah, we're
grumpy.
Consistent. You know, just what you got.
Yeah,
we'll never change. I don't know if that's good or bad. if you ever think you're going to change for a guy like us, it ain't happening. Just saying.
No. Nope.
Now you're looking for a job exactly where, and how's the job market?
And where do you want to settle?
Yeah.
Right now, my eyes are going back on Australia. They have a one-year work visa, and then you can get a company to sponsor you. So, I mean, I'm looking at, if I'm going to be in the U.S., I'm looking to settle with a company that has an Australian office, preferably in Sydney or Melbourne. But I think right now the job market, it's a mix. Right now, a lot of my friends have offers. However, they're not in love with their offers, so we're still shopping, is what we say. So on that note, I think, you know, obviously, like, you're seeing all the reports, you're hearing all the things, but we're currently getting offers. However, what's really interesting that so I have three cousins who are about 5 to 10 years older than me. All of them just got laid off. One worked at DocuSign in New York. She was 3 years post-grad from the University of Michigan. She got laid off, no fault of her own. My other one was about 8 years post-grad from University of Illinois, their business school, working at like this finance firm that was actually Belgium, and they had two offices, so one in Belgium, one in Chicago, got laid off. And then the other one, she couldn't do another tax season with them. It was a big four. And she studied at University of Notre Dame, and so she's currently having a hard time, though, finding a new job. So all three of them, great degrees, great programs, are all struggling to either retain a job or now find a new job that they really enjoy. And so currently, personally, less of my stress, honestly, is on finding and landing that initial job. It's more of what's it going to look like in the next 3 to 5 years? Are they still going to have that capacity to keep me on? And is there genuinely going to be room for promotions? If not, that's not something I'm
Where's home?
Suburbs of Chicago.
Okay.
She's Naperville, right? Okay.
No, I'm like closer to Evanston.
All right. So one of those people. Okay.
Yeah.
I'm Southside. We we're Southside kind of guys. Well, first of all, when I graduated, nobody was hiring at all. It was right during the oil embargo. I don't know anybody who got a job out of school. Maybe Bob Gold, because he had a CPA. Everybody else fled to grad school, or a couple guys fled to the Army, of all places. Just one sort of piece of advice. It's one thing to get tossed out of a job in Evanston where your parents and people are right around you. It's quite another to be laid off in Seattle when you don't know a soul and how the hell to even get back. So you got to be careful. In one man's opinion, here I'm giving advice. I worked for Pullman and they wanted to transfer me to Butler, Pennsylvania, and I go, that's where Trump got shot. And I go, wait a minute. I'm not going to Butler, Pennsylvania. I'm playing five nights of softball. Blah blah blah. I don't have any friends there. Basically, screw that. And sure enough, we all got laid off a year later. What would I have done in Butler, Pennsylvania? They wouldn't even have paid my way back, for God's sake. So just kind of...
You'd have hitchhiked home.
You need kind of a base. And if you get a company that wants to send you a year to Australia and bring you back, I think that would be absolutely spectacular. Just be careful you're out of a job in Australia is all I'm saying. That's a bit
of... I think that's something that... we don't like to think about that long term. My least favorite interview question, all of ours, is like, what do you want to do in 5 years? And we stare back at them sometimes. We don't. We have answers. But part of you just wants to stare back at them and say, like, I don't know.
I want to be working right here.
Yeah.
Well, in retrospect, when we graduated, guys like Russell and me, it was totally different. I don't know anybody who had a student loan. If they did, it was, a couple grand. I could have worked during the summer and on weekends and paid for my tuition. I did at the University of Chicago. It's a whole different world now. But one of my classes, the University of Chicago, one class now is more than my entire tuition for 2 years. So you can only imagine the scope of this. So when I graduated, I didn't know anybody a soul. So my answer always was, this is a manufacturing operation. I want to learn as much as I can about this. Help you guys out as much as I can, and we'll see where it goes. 5 years later, I was trading options. You want to learn as much as you can, and if it's a place that holds you, you'll stay, and if not, you go onward. Because it's all about you, not about them. Is that fair, Russell?
Oh, very fair. And I think it's really funny, the whole, you talk about moving somewhere else for a job. My parents didn't want me when I moved to Chicago because they thought I would fall on my face and move back to Memphis. They didn't want me to even get an apartment. They wanted me to find temporary housing for a very short period of time, so it would be easy for me to move home.
Well, it's not unusual. I mean, when
no, not at all.
My friend, you remember Robin, who unfortunately passed this year in an auto accident, but when she moved to Chicago, she went to Michigan. She's from Albany. She went to Michigan. She got a job at I think it was it Harris Bank? And Robin was had a personality kind of like yours. Yeah, I mean, she was a go-getter, nice lady. And there was a place here in Chicago right near the park that was like a big dorm for ladies moving to Chicago, essentially trying out a job, and you could live there and rent a room, and you know, it was like a big fraternity house, and you could stay there for like up to 6 months or so, and if the job didn't pan out, you didn't have to worry about a lease, you didn't have to worry about any of that stuff, you could just go. And she stayed there for like 6 months, and then at Harris Bank, she decided she wanted to get her MBA at Northwestern, Kellogg, borrowed the money from her mother, paid her back with interest the first year she got out, and ended up being an assistant treasurer at Pullman, you know, going all over the world doing, you know, import-export bank stuff. But she had there was a place here where she could land for 6 months where if she got fired the next week, she could have gone home without any leases or any of that kind of crap. And she said it was really nice to have an interim spot. I'm not saying you should do that, but you know, it was. I wonder if that place is even still there, Russell. I mean, I doubt it.
You know who got their start that way? Tom Hanks.
Really?
Huh. Remember the first TV show he was ever on was called Bosom Buddies, and he and his buddy dressed up like women so they could live in a place like that.
Really?
Yeah.
I don't want to go into the details on that.
The first TV show he was ever on was called Bosom Buddies, and that was their thing. They needed a place to live. And then, of course, you know, he got all excited about one of the women in the place, so then he didn't want to move away. But, you know.
Well, imagine that happening, you know.
I know. Hijinks ensued.
Yeah, well, you know, it's...
Bosom Buddies.
Isn't it beautiful being young? Well, you know, just always, you know, just kind of cover your bases, because you never know when the economy is going to do something bad and all of a sudden everybody's gone. I mean, it is amazing. I talk to people here, younger people. I said, when are you going back to work? The guy goes, I go in the office 2 days a week. There's nobody there. What's the point? Because I've never met my boss. I mean, I think you got to be real careful in places like that looking at your future, because if you never even met anybody, how do you know what they think of you?
And beyond, and they're not really going to feel that bad firing you either.
No, it's a. So what's the perfect job? You want to be doing, you know, high end finance? You want to be doing stuff within the company? Do you want to be doing takeovers? I mean, where do you want to go with this?
Yeah, you know, that's where I'm trying to navigate through right now. Honestly, I don't have a confident answer to say. I'm looking forward to the CFA case competition this year with Dr. Rhodes and Dr. Demiak, and hopefully that'll help give me a little bit more insight and guidance. I've had smaller internships with financial firms, like just local ones, like financial advising, and I didn't love the small firm, so I know at least I'm looking at a bigger firm. I love the idea of doing something that has more of a global impact, and so global banking, global finance is kind of where I default to. However, like I said, I'm not super sold, which is something I'm working on because time's ticking.
Well, you got plenty of time. Just, I will say that every course you're in, even if it seems boring as sin, learn all you can, because at some point you'll use the stuff you should have learned in that class. Amazing as it may seem, you will remember stuff from every class if you actually learn the stuff that's there. I honestly believe that. I took a class in the University of Chicago, and it was the weirdest thing, Russell. It was kind of like everybody has a class in a certain, you know, whatever discipline. Where, like, they had Notre Dame, they had one for engineering. It was something like moral ethics in engineering or something. Of course, all the knuckleheads in my dorm found out it was an easy class, and they all showed up even though they weren't engineers. But it was something, okay, how do the people who have engineering, how do you... When you start budgeting a building, making sure building codes, you know, 2x building codes, how safe do you make it? How do you make the life decisions around your study? Well, this class was, and I talked about it with you last week, this class had to do with using regression analysis and stuff to rate hospitals. And we spent a month on executive compensation. And we spent a month on crime and punishment in terms of what fines should be so people are deterred from doing the crime. It was all the stuff that you would never think of that you would use. And I refer to that class more than I do anything else. Because most of the stuff you find, I think, Ken, is you end up with the principles that Dr. Rhodes is talking about. How does it apply to real life? And at some point it will. And you'll sort of get it. why it applies. And it's kind of fun when it happens. How's that for a preacher? How's that for selling your game there, Russell?
Preaching. That's you're selling me big time.
Well, I mean,
I know things.
Yeah, he knows things. And
I know things.
And but it's interesting how much every class ends up being something you remember if you're there and you actually give it a shot. I can't imagine doing this stuff in COVID from home. I love being in class. I had some really good professors. And whatever. So what you're graduating when? June?
Yeah, this upcoming May.
May, okay.
So
now your course load, are you almost done with stuff where you can take electives now, or are you still doing the stuff you have to take? Or
yeah, I'm this semester and next semester is piled up with finance courses, which is good. Because I went abroad for a semester, it kind of put me behind a bit, which is all right, something we anticipated. So we'll see what next semester looks like. Right now it's been a lot of intermediate investments, intermediate corporate finance. What else do I have going on? Those are like the two big finance courses. We have like a real estate finance and real estate class. So,
really? What's that about?
Yeah, it's kind of cool. It talks about essentially, obviously,
is that Sarah Corr's class?
Yeah, it is.
Talk about her as well, because she's one of the best professors down here.
She's absolutely incredible. Yeah. I love her. So number one, like, her background is fascinating. I couldn't even fully encompass it. She comes essentially from the real estate world, obviously. And so she's now in charge of our real estate co-major. And she's a really, in my opinion, a really phenomenal job. The way that she teaches, her material is very understandable in the sense that she has so many real life examples that she's constantly talking about to actually understand what an easement is, you know, what all those different parts of real estate are. And so where we're headed right now is to look into like projections, into like valuing properties, like all those formulas and equations. I couldn't even tell you with confidence right now what it's all going to entail. But she also, as a professor, runs the real estate workshop, which is essentially like an intensive that you're going through a new case. To my understanding, I believe you go through a new case every week. And then do they have to pitch it, Dr. Rhodes? Do you know?
Yeah, there's a pitch competition. There's a pitch part of it. Yes.
What is that?
Companies.
Oh, pitch that. Okay. What do you think is the next class going to be diverted into the hurricane?
I don't know.
Boy, I'd love her to have her on our guest to talk about that. I bet she has all kinds of ideas of what's going to happen down there.
People are going to just move. There's just nothing to. It's not necessarily down there, Florida. It's down there, Tennessee, North Carolina. There's going to be nothing to go back to.
Well, let me ask the Bodias, as they say in the South Side, the condos that now are going to be very difficult to sell because you probably have, well, they might be wrecked, but even if they're not, you have trouble with the insurance. If you're in one of the, you know, communities, I guess they're just going to send you the bill, and a lot of the older people or even regular people won't be able to afford. Do you see, I'll ask you the question first. Do you see the $300,000 condo getting essentially puked out? That's a trading floor term. At 120, and the next person just self-insuring and just paying the 120 and say, I'll absorb what comes? I mean, then just roll with no insurance because I paid a little bit, not so much for it. It's like buying a car for $1,000. I don't need to insure it. Is that going to be the end of the day, or are we going to end up with some sort of an insurance thing that combines all the stuff from New Jersey to, you know, the Texas coast, and everybody's in the same pool? Or what do you see the future of that?
Yeah, that's a good question. Honestly, I'm part of me is more curious on what these insurance companies are thinking, in the sense of, like, as a consumer, I can say personally, I might say, okay, like, I'm with you. Let's take it for a lower payment if I know it's going to get swept up one day. But as an insurance company, part of me has to be wondering, what are they looking at when, you know, like we talked about earlier today, when it comes to climate change, when it comes to like these consumer behaviors, like, what factors are running through their minds. And I think that would honestly influence me as a consumer of, you know, who would be looking to getting insurance, is how much prevention work can be done to stop this from happening and continue to get the rate it is. Because honestly, I wouldn't get insurance. It feels stupid.
Well, if you don't have any.
you're really underwater.
Well, but there's
yeah, it's just going to continue. I mean, we were talking about, you know, once every 20 years you're going to get wiped out. If that's going to happen, you basically should be paying 5% of the value of your home for your insurance policy. And you know, if that's unaffordable.
Well, yeah.
So if that becomes unaffordable, maybe what will happen is fewer people will live in places where the cost of living is so high relative to the insurance. Much like you wouldn't move to certain suburbs of Chicago because the property taxes are absolutely ridiculous. So it might start to be that same sort of mindset where, you know, I always wanted to retire to Florida, but I don't want to have to pay $20,000 a year in homeowners insurance, which is going to be forced if you've got a mortgage. So, you know, that I think there'll be a cost of living type of situation. And if it continues on the trend that it's continuing on with the climate change, making it more frequent, but also probably less predictable. Well, you and I know the higher the volatility, the higher the derivative cost. So, and insurance, buying insurance, homeowners insurance is nothing more than kind of a derivative based on an unfavorable outcome. So that type of the volatility that insurance companies are having to deal with, and the certainty that things are just going to continue to get worse in certain parts of the country, as far as natural disasters go, they're just going to have to keep charging more, and eventually it's going to price people out of living in certain places. Well, already has.
But I wonder, you know, everybody. I mean, as we do the show, Yana, you get the idea that somehow news is kind of being made up, and you know, cool. And to be perfectly blunt, if it bleeds, it leads. Right? Did you ever see a movie, Yana? Is it Tango Foxtrot and something something with what's her name? The lady from Saturday Night Live was the star.
The one
who played Sarah Palin in the Saturday Night Live. What the hell's her name?
Oh, I know you're talking
yeah,
about.
Yeah, she's. By the way, I'm in love
with
her.
Not the brunette Amy Poehler.
Yeah, I mean, but it had to do with she was a reporter in Afghanistan when the war was going on, and how in order to keep it on the second or third page over here, not even the first, you had to keep photographing in bigger and bigger events because people were tired of it here, and it's real easy to say, and could very well be true in my opinion, that some of these events are becoming more frequent, but I've yet to see a study where somebody sticks it in front of my nose and says, since we've been charting hurricanes for the last 100 years, here's how many we had per year and here's where they all hit. I don't know if anybody really knows if this is a... Last year we had like none, right? 2 years ago we had the real bad one.
Yeah, and the other thing is like the history that we have to work with. I heard someone, you know, I saw a weathercaster who really, I mean, he was almost in tears talking about how bad this was going to be for Tampa. And he said, and they're saying that this thing went from, and now I'm going to get the stat wrong, but it went from like a 3 to a 5 faster than any other hurricane, you know, in history. Well, I mean, how long have we been able to keep up with what category a hurricane is when it's out in the middle of the Gulf of Mexico?
Probably we've had hurricane planes that people flew in the middle.
Maybe a century.
No, not even that. I'm talking. You need planes.
I'm trying to be kind of air to that side.
When's the first guy dumb enough with a real sturdy plane to fly into one?
I don't know. Have you seen the video of the people flying through the one last night?
Oh, I've seen them before, and it's really something. But, you know,
I'm not
going to
do that. My youngest daughter's probably going to do that a dozen times.
Oh, God.
And the other one's going to go try to, you know,
but there were a lot of
photographer in a war zone.
There were a lot of hurricanes when I was young that hit, like, you know, damn near uninhabited places of Mexico and Texas. Nobody cared.
Yeah.
But this is kind of weird in that they're turning right when they get in the Gulf. That usually, the normal hurricane starts like over in Africa, somehow makes it either out in the Atlantic where nobody cares about it, or makes it into the Gulf when it's a problem because it's surrounded by land. And a lot of them just keep going west and bang into Mexico where nobody lives, or Texas where nobody really cares. Well, unless you happen to be the cow over there, the person who has a ranch there. But this going in and turning right and whacking into Florida is really unusual. You think it has to do with the... I'll quiz your daughters. It has to do with the rapid change from El Nino to La Nina? That the shear season coming in?
I would assume those jet stream flows have something to do with it from year to year.
Yeah, I don't...
Because it takes warmer air to heat these to make these things grow. And if you're getting a jet stream situation where... you know, the cooler air is going farther north than it normally does, that's totally gonna set up a situation where these things can grow out of nowhere.
Didn't like Columbus run into a hurricane in his second or third trip? You get all blown up?
I don't know. I wasn't there.
I would love that course. I think would be absolutely spectacular, that real estate course. So you got
in Sarah Kors, where this is at Kelly, Indianapolis. But this woman named Sarah Kors, she is just like so accessible for the students. Takes them on field trips almost weekly. She's just awesome. She just I don't think she gets enough recognition at how awesome she is.
Well, this is an Indiana question. What if you were in Bloomington and you want to take an Indiana course? How do you do? Are you in Indianapolis or are you in Bloomington?
We're in Indianapolis.
Okay, so.
Down is at Kelly, Indianapolis.
All right, so there's also Kelly, Bloomington, I assume.
Without getting too detailed in it, there's some pretty intricate... it's pretty difficult to go from one to the other.
Okay, so they're pretty much independent.
They're very siloed. Very siloed.
So it's like Illinois, Chicago, and Illinois, Champaign, sort of.
Mm-hmm.
Sort of, but I teach Bloomington classes, but we share professors.
Okay.
I teach more Bloomington than Indianapolis classes.
Well, you truck down there once in a while, too, right?
Yeah, yeah. So,
Keanu, you never do. You're just in Indianapolis. You stay there.
Yeah. The whole setup I've always felt like it wasn't worth trying to go through it on the radio with you.
Okay, well, so it's complicated.
But
all right.
Kelly is one business school. And like we have in Bloomington, we have finance, econ, management, marketing, accounting, and then then there's an Indianapolis, and we're like one of those type of silos, and all disciplines are in the Indianapolis silo. So, you know, my office is next to a manager, somebody that's a management professor, and I kind of like that because I like talking to people in other disciplines. You know, like down in Bloomington, I probably wouldn't even know who Sarah was.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so. Keanu, when are you going to get a hunger for starting to trade like Russell and I do?
Well, right now I'm in the CME trading competition, and I'm going to be so honest with you. I have no clue what's happening in that thing. When I signed in to CQ, what is this?
CQG. He's using an old CQG. There's a blast from the past
every
for
single
you. what are you trading?
Every single tab was open. I'm doing foreign exchange and Bitcoin.
Really?
Futures.
Just kidding.
Yeah.
there you go. That's how much I know about what I'm doing.
Well, foreign exchange is fun. The hard part about the foreign exchange is that 99% of the business is not in the futures. It's in forward contracts through banks. So you're kind of the tail of the dog there, wouldn't you say, Russell?
Yeah, I feel like there was a period of time where that futures pit was kind of a price, the currency future pits before, you know, when we still had Swiss franc, D-mark, and a few, you know, as opposed to just the euro currency and the pound and the yen. But those pits were used as pricing vehicles for the over-the-counter markets.
Right.
And as hedging vehicles for the over-the-counter markets. But I think the over-the-counter market developed so much that volume just started to move away from the currency pits or from the.
When you were talking to my brother Dan the other night, did he mentioned that at one point we were 40% of the open interest PTI of the peso contract.
Were you?
Yep.
Oh wow.
This is going to scare you, Keanu.
You dominate.
My brother and Dr. J went down to. We did a lot of seminars with people in Mexico about options, and of course, it leaned right over to futures, right? So Dan and Dr. J go down there, and they're talking to these guys, and they're thinking about having a futures in the peso contract. They decide they want to do it, so they put together some guys that could trade futures, and then so John talks to me, and he goes, they just had a test for the exchange down there. And I go, what do you mean a test? He goes, do they have a test? He goes, well, they do now. And I go, don't tell me. he and Dan wrote the test, which Dan is perfectly capable of doing, by the way. And he goes, yeah, your brother wrote a really nice test, and a bunch of guys passed, and some guys didn't. now they're futures traders. I'm going, okay then. But, the peso was interesting, Canada, because once in a while they would devalue the peso. As a government, so that kind of lent a little volatility to the peso, wouldn't you say, Russell?
Yeah, no, most definitely.
But this is here's a shot for why guys like us become cynical. Yeah, we had a bunch of dudes up here from Mexico, but a week long option contract, and these guys are heavy hitters. A couple of guys were from Pemex, and a couple of guys from what was the other one, Telmex, and they're sitting down, and we. At the end of the seminar, we always bought drinks down in this bar in the insurance exchange building, Excelsior. We'd get a big table, and they'd all come down, and they made the world's strongest drink. So if ever you wanted to hear something from somebody, basically they'd come out with it once in a while because they're all trashed. So I said to the dude, I go, I feel really bad for you guys that you devalued your currency this week by like 10%. The guy says to me, why should you feel bad for us? And I'm going, okay, where's this one going? Well, if you know it's going to be devaluated the night before, the day before, you move your money into dollars, and the next day you bring it back, and you're 10% richer than your neighbor. And I'm going, okay then. See, I bet you didn't plan on hearing something like that this morning, did you?
No, not at all.
Did you say information is power? Is that fair, Russell?
It is. It is.
That's why if you listen to the show more, you'll hear a host named me constantly ragging on the part that I don't get weekly money supply numbers anymore when I know other people are getting them.
I've got somebody looking into that for you, by the way.
I hope he's like ahead.
Seeing if there's something similar that would give you the same sort of insight.
There probably is, but I guarantee you I won't get it.
Well, they're digging through the Federal Reserve of St. Louis is really good at offering just about every piece of data you could ever want. That's where you and I go when we're digging into old CPI stuff and digging out the little pieces of it, which I'm actually creating a YouTube video with Dr. Ademiak about today. We're going to talk about how we use CPI in the classroom. Wow. I'll send you a link to it.
Canada, if you come back on, I'll give you a little bit of a dissertation without boring you to death about when we first fought inflation. We actually really did fight inflation, not like this time. Back when Paul Volcker was around, the key number that came out every Thursday night was the money supply number, and it came out at 3:30 on Thursday night, wasn't it, Russell? Something like that. So
yeah.
there was a contract. They still have it. Doesn't trade much. And the CBOE that was the biggest contract in the world, called the OEX, and you could exercise that every night. It was a cash settlement, so it was essentially a trade if you exercised it. You had to let everybody know you're going to exercise that by 3:15. Because if you waited till after the money supply came out, it was a huge advantage. And so it was a really big deal for the weekly money supply to come out when they were fighting inflation the first time. So you could probably read into that maybe I don't think they're so intent on fighting it this time, and one of the reasons is they took that number away from people. Now, is that too conspiratorial, Russell, for a young lady?
It's very conspiratorial for a young lady, and you just complete her brain just exploded all over my office.
I don't think I can intimidate this one too much. She seems pretty cool with this.
She's frightening.
She
scares me.
Can we invite you back someday, or do we bore you to death?
Absolutely. I think that's honestly fascinating to just hear about your guys' experience and that thought process behind it and all the resources that you took, you went through. Because I think the fun part about you two is that you're very honest and open and real about what happened. And so it makes it a little bit more entertaining for us. I'm excited because I really hope that Dr. Rhodes, you're able to bring some more people on, some more.
We most definitely are.
Can you do a big
thing? And Chief, we'll come by and see you.
Okay.
I'm going to take them on a field trip to SIBO in the spring. And
I'll be here.
We'll walk over and come see you.
Kiana, next time you have to do me a favor. I'm going to give you a full 5-10 minutes. I want to know all about that class and what different countries, what's it like to open up a business in 2 or 3 different countries. So pick a couple and educate me.
Absolutely. I look forward to it.
You're so far ahead of me there. I have no idea what it would entail. I could take a stab probably at China because I've talked to a few people, but God, if I had opened something in Great Britain, I wouldn't have a clue. Wow. Anyway, thank you very much.
Don't worry.
Russell, take care of yourself, buddy. SB Futures
Down
2. Fairway.
I need an email address from you.
Of mine?
Not from you. Just look at your text, please.
Okay.
I'll talk to you. Okay.
All right. Fair enough.
All right.
All right. SP Futures down 2, NASDAQ Futures down 23. Back tomorrow, Stocks and Jacks.
That's all, folks.